to Forge the Narrative.
Hey everybody, welcome to Forge the Narrative. My name is Paul Murphy, your host. I'm joined tonight by Ricky Addington.
Chuck a truck.
You heard everybody, Ricky Addington's back. And Val Heffafinger.
Good Lord, Paul Murphy, were you just shot out of a cannon?
That's what I do, man. We have the Battle of Souls podcast. This is the first episode of 2020.
2020.
Yep. I can't remember the episode number of this, but I'll have it in the episode, the show notes before.
At least 2020.
Yeah. Oh, but welcome, everybody. We're, again, this is holiday times, juggling schedules and stuff. So, you know, these guys showed up today.
You're settling for the Heffelfinger. Yeah.
The B squad. We were who were bored today, so we were available. That's fine.
So I got to play some games recently, testing for all these tournaments and stuff coming up, playing the Blood Angels still, loving it. I mean, they just absolutely just, they're just playable. They just work, man. And that's kind of just add a little bit more joy to the game for me now.
I love that amazing review. The Blood Angels, they are playable. Yes.
It's a great thing about Power Armor. It's really hilarious. Well, it's sad and hilarious. Just the about face that Power Armor is in the process of making. What is comprised of your list these days? What were you trotting out there?
Well, you know, I'll tell you about that in just one second. But to Ricky's point, you know, if I can, is that the game is, it's like when the faction that you really want to play is not super strong, it's kind of a difficult world. You have to find other things to feel, be excited about. And, you know, thankfully, you know, like painting, I like painting stuff for other people. I like other armies too. But like when the army that I just really, really want to move figures around with is functional, it makes me happier.
Yeah, well, I mean, Blood Angels and Dark Angels players, we've always kind of been in that same boat, whereas it's like, okay, what is our goal when we go to a tournament, right? Because my goal was, let me go 4-1. If I can get 4-1, that's a win. 3-2, as long as I go 3-2, I'm happy. So that's with Dark Angels. If I go 3-2 at a GT, I consider it a win because, you know, I'm never pulling out, you know, the win with Primaris Dark Angels. So I'm looking forward to this month's releases probably just as much as anybody. But I'm very excited so that I can be as excited about Dark Angels again as you are about Blood Angels. So yeah. I definitely know your pain.
So Val, I'm rocking just an absolute plethora of Sanguinary Guard.
Nice.
And Death Company. Now, you know, we talked previously on the last show that, you know, I probably should just have 30 Sanguinary Guard in the list, but I got 20 Sanguinary Guard and 15 Death Company for a lot of things. Like the Death Company get all these little tricks and things, and Sanguinary Guard get a lot of tricks too. But when you factor in that Lamartey's 100-point chaplain who gets all the new chaplain rules, and he functions basically like a chapter master for the Death Company.
Full disclosure, did not put together the fact that Lamartey's is a chaplain.
He is, and so is Astaroth. So I've been running Astaroth
skull
and Lamartey's.
Is Astaroth the sinewy guy with the axe over his head?
He is, yes. Yeah. And his rules have been kind of, I mean, I think they've been okay, and I think he's been kind of on the fringe for many, many years in different incarnations, but now he is really good. He gets, you know, a ton of chaplain powers to use. He's no slouch in combat. He can make Death Company auto-pass the leadership, which is a big thing for them, because when you take a big fat squad of them and somebody says, I don't want your 15 Death Company to exist anymore, and then you're trying to take a leadership on, like, -7, it's real hard.
Yeah.
But auto passes and using things like Lamartey's leadership help in those situations. So it's a fun toy. Like, I really love those models, and I actually found myself, I did not have quite enough Death Company armed the way that I needed them. I found a use for some of my assault marine parts. I've harvested them for parts to flesh out the Death Company the way that I needed them to be.
That's fantastic. So are you just gluing the severed arms into their teeth, or are you actually reattaching the limbs?
No, I'm reattaching them. They look as if it looks intentional. Like, that's really what you want to have. Oh, that looks like a very intentional modeling choice he just made.
So let me ask you, are your Death Company now like black armor, red arms?
Yes. Well, a couple of them. Just a couple.
Strong look.
Just leave it.
It looks like, you know, again, because, you know, they paint their armor black on the Eve of Battle, you know, so maybe they didn't get to that arm. It's like C-3PO.
You ever try and paint your right arm? It's not easy.
I can just see some dude, he's painting his armor, and they're like, oh, we gotta go, and he's trapped.
Yeah, the drop pod doors fly open, and he has to just, yeah.
They just throw their bucket of paint down and charge. That's fine.
I will probably get it taken care of by a tournament day, but at the same time, it actually looks kind of neat and intentional. I've got some red built into my Death Company jump packs.
Okay.
So, you know, whatever. It doesn't look, and it's only on the, we're talking about three models that have a red arm.
What was this particular body part that you were harvesting?
Just the chainsword arm, where if I had like a power fist or a power sword on a Death Company guy, I'm not taking many of those. I just don't think that they need them. I think the volume of attacks.
That was an interesting aha I had walking the dog. Actually, this afternoon was when you were talking about how you don't put the axes on the Sanguinary Guard because they get the +1 to wound anyway. Because who cares?
Yeah, that's basically it. I get a little lean on war gear. I don't go always over the top. Like, I'll take just enough of something and typically don't. I don't want to say spam or whatever, but because I'm not against that either. Like, by all means, go up. But I kind of like to diversify a little bit in my list. And I think they call that
the min-maxing.
Yeah. And I think that those things are just a little bit more win than you probably need most of the time. But, you know, whatever. There is, you know, some building in your own luck into your list. And so if a power sword for the extra AP or something, you know, really need it, you might as well, you know, be glad that you have it. But I think that when, you know, you unleash rage, shock assault, get up to like 6 or a billion attacks or whatever on these things, then
practically one,
you know, yeah. Oh, playing in a test game this weekend. I have 15 Death Company fighting one Demon Prince. Uh-huh. He soaks almost all the wounds on his armor save and his feel no pain from being Nurgle. And I got so mad that I fought again, burning the stratagems, fogging. You know what he did?
Same thing. Oh, I've seen that movie. It sucks.
Yeah, Mephiston did the same thing to him in another round of combat. But other than that, it was pretty average dice the whole way.
All right.
Yeah. I had a Demon Prince charge into Mephiston. Mephiston's like, you know what? I got 2+ save and a 5+ feel no pain.
Did you get the supersized Mephiston yet up and running?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he is cool. He is fully online and used him. Everything. He's everything you want in games. He is basically a Blood Angel Demon Prince, if you're needing to equate to what he can do. I mean, just his threat range is pretty far. I mean, when moving 7, Wings of Sanguinus, you know, 19 inches plus a charge, he gets the +1 on the charge because he's still a Blood Angel, and then rolls in there with strength 10, wounding almost everything in the game on 2s.
I really super didn't understand the backlash against Mephiston when he got primaricized, because like he was already being used as a smash captain option. Like when people were just doing the Supreme Command attachment with, you know, 3 smash captains, sometimes they would just have 2 smash captains and Mephiston or Librarian Dreadnought. Like he was already getting play, granted not super recently, but like he was good. Like
that was the interesting thing. It's like with the old Mephiston, you could actually make a case for the Librarian Dreadnought because of, you know, Mephiston not having the extra wound or whatever. I mean, that was like it was a little bit more fringe, and now it's just kind of like you might as well just be taking Mephiston.
Well,
I mean, the two.
Well, the model alone, it's you know, I mean, yeah, we can talk about mechanics and gameplay and winning and everything, but the model, like, sorry, why would you not have that in your army if your armor is red? Why would you not have that model standing in front of it?
Mephiston is also the source of my most favorite autocorrect of all time, written to me by a dear friend Stephen Burris. He wrote Memphis Tom.
You know, there's somebody that's has to be somebody.
Memphis Tom is Mephiston to me from now on. He's just old Memphis Tom. I just think of banjos when I see that vampire descending from the sky.
Oh, that's there you go. He slices and dices with that sword. I mean, it is bestial. Astarath, also tough. And then, of course, you get the Smash Captain. The Smash Captain, Banginius, is even more deadly now because of the +1 to charge. I mean, I normally take the extra feel no pain on him, but I think I've been converted to the Artisan of War for the 4 damage on the Thunderhammer. Now, plotting. Everyone knows that's good, right? I know it's good. But again, I'm kind of in that. It's just kind of like more win kind of thing. Maybe I need the extra defense instead of a little bit more offense. But
I mean, that's going to be matchup dependent. But if you got a bunch of assault sense staring at you, 4 damage Thunderhammer is pretty nice.
Yeah. I think actually what you see nowadays, the 4 damage Thunderhammer is probably going to be the better option because you are more likely to get into assault. You're almost going to never not be in assault. Before, I was kind of worried about not being able to get into assault. I'm always that fear of just, okay, one turn I'm going to come down, even with the reroll or other tricks, I'm going to be like just standing there behind trying to be hiding behind a shrubbery or something, getting lit up with bolters or anything. And so I wanted the extra full no pain, but I think now with the +1, you're going to always be in that assault capacity.
Yeah, and you also have chaplains who can give you +2 on top of that.
Yep. So why settle for defense when you can just have a much better offense? I think some people, what's the quote? Is that the best defense is a great offense?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, until you run into a really good defense.
This is true, but I think that if I were to start building my mind into what I'm going to take to kind of go auto include on stratagems and warlord traits and that kind of stuff, I think I'm going the extra damage on Thunderhammer.
All right.
Whereas
I've
before,
just given up on and feel no pain anyway because I've never made a feel no pain save in my life, I don't think. So
just gotta play that average, man. Long game. Playing the long game on it.
Well, okay, we can a little talk about the Dark Angels, man. We know something's coming for Dark Angels.
I want to be excited, but you know what? You all got Mephiston. I'm getting a captain.
Oh, well, boo-hoo. Come on.
You're not just getting a captain. You're actually getting several captains in one box.
Yeah, I'm hoping we get some nice rules out of that.
Okay, so, like, imagine if, like, the Deathwing gets something cool. Like, imagine if Deathwing suddenly were viable, man. And you're complaining about...
I'm holding my breath, hoping that Deathwing gets something really exciting.
Ravenwing?
We'll see. Yeah. I've got a lot of black bikes. I've got a lot of bone white armor. I would love for that to be a thing.
This mod is beefcake, though, man. I mean, he is the dude. I mean, I liked the pose for the commander when he came out. Like, the name guy was Captain of the Fifth Company or something. I like him when they showed that, but now they're showing this figure has multiple options.
I like the story they've got going with him. I mean, it's, you know, he's the he's the first Primaris to be inducted into the Deathwing. So this is like, you know, that's really cool. You know, me just like fanboying out, I would love to see the Deathwing go Primaris or something and have like Deathwing Aggressors or something, you know, that something like that would be insane. I would love to see that sort of thing happen. Just because, I mean, I honestly feel like, you know, Terminators are going to go away at some point, right? I mean, we're seeing all these, everything's kind of being phased out. So what's going to happen to the Deathwing?
Well, I mean, the future, immediate future of the Primaris range is a bit fuzzy right now. So it's hard to tell until the picture comes into clearer view.
I think that's a great way of putting it. That may be the best way of putting that. Apparently, I think someone may have snapped a leak from space.
Yeah, that's right. The Hubble telescope pointing in the wrong direction was responsible for the...
Reflected off another satellite.
But that's how you got to get lucky in space. You just happen to got to be looking at the right place at the right time.
That sounds about right.
But, there was, not to take us completely back to Blood Angels, but the Death Company Intercessors.
Yeah.
Everyone just seems to be cool with that. I mean, the fact that they exist. I don't think you want to take them quite yet in a tournament game, but just the fact that they exist is good.
Yeah.
I mean, just from a fluff perspective, like, I'm just a little hopeful that I was kind of hoping that they would do something like more of a schism between, like, the Primaris squares who are grown in vats and the existing chapters, and that there was maybe a little bit more palace intrigue around that, because it sounded... I think I read that White Dwarf where they talked... It was a White Dwarf article? They introduced that guy?
Yeah, it's in there, and I think it's mentioned... I want to say some of that's mentioned in the Dark Angels Codex as well, but the Dark Angels are very distrustful of Primaris. Like, I think it's in the Codex that they almost opened fire on Gilliman when he showed up with the Primaris, because they didn't know that he was coming with, like, reinforcements. He was coming to say, like, hey, guys, here you go, and they're freaking out because they're like, oh, God, someone told... and they're thinking that they're getting ready to get lit up, you know. So there's that really neat
something to hide, perhaps.
Yeah. So there's that really neat narrative there, right? And that's why I was really hoping to see at some point the lion come back, because I would love to see Gilliman be that up and up. You know, Gilliman's just that good guy, that up and up poster boy, right? But I would like to see the lion there to offer a slightly more cynical view of everything, you know, and I would like to have seen that play out that way, but I appreciate the story wise that they're going with the Primaris and the Dark Angels, and that they're very distrustful of them, because that makes sense.
With the whole Dark Imperium sort of narrative that was coming out with the 8th edition, I thought too, like, well, what if like the Lion comes back and he kind of leads like not like a heretical like side of the Imperium, but maybe it's like sort of the alternative emo rock side of the Imperium or something like that. I don't know. And he's got sort of an alternative solution to Gilliman, and they're rolling around. I thought that'd be kind of neat, but
I think that would have been, I think that, you know, I always want the good guys to get together and fight the bad guys, right? But I think that would be a situation to put the Imperium in of the Marines being distrustful of Gilliman returning and these Primaris, and Gilliman's been, you know, hanging out with the Eldar and all this stuff. So it definitely opens some doors there for some neat conflict that I would like to have seen.
Gilliman is pretty cosmopolitan, isn't he?
He gets around.
And also, one final thing on the whole psychic awakening. What's the deal with Dark Angels and Grey Knights chilling? Like first the Primaris are cool in the inner circle or whatever, and also Grey Knights are just hanging out with these dudes?
I think they just needed to put the Grey Knights in a book, right? Like, I don't know. You know,
Grey Knights have always had special privileges.
Yeah, I mean, they can kind of do what they want to do, but my gosh, can we get some Primaris Grey Knights? Like, I would build that army. I would love to see Primaris Marines with Stormbolters on their wrists.
My prediction is we're not going to see them in the short term.
No, I don't think so.
I mean, I could be wrong. I hope I'm wrong, but I don't think we'll see them in the short term.
The thing with Grey Knights is if you go Primaris with Grey Knights, it's literally it's the whole range. Like, there's not a model that can survive that. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Well, I mean, think of it this way: the whole Grey Knight, the whole kit and caboodle, is built off of two kits for the most part.
Yeah, that's what I mean, right? Yeah. Like, and then like the Dread Knight it's a Terminator in a larger Terminator, so like you'd probably need another bigger Terminator to put that in.
No, we seem to be okay with some of the vestiges of the old thing still hanging out. Like, for, you know, Tech Marines and stuff get to walk around with Thunderfire cannons. Everyone's fine with that because the rules are amazing.
Yeah, rules are amazing. I also don't mind. For whatever reason, I don't mind the vehicles alongside them, because I actually really don't mind when the vehicles are out of scale, especially to the smaller side, because it just means that we can actually fit the stuff on the table.
we're always like, there's no way three Marines aren't fitting in that thing.
Yeah, the Rhino.
Yeah, but I'm okay with that.
But where's the driver going? You know, like, he's just got his like knees wrapped around his neck.
I feel like they're just hanging off the sides of that thing.
Sure, it's like the old orc
open up all the doors. I mean, come on, you remember driving around when you were in high school? Only one guy had a car. You all had to figure out how to get up to the restaurant.
First blown tire I ever had was learning that you can in fact put too many dumb kids in a car. Blew my rear tires.
Yep, that's one of the tracks on those things. They figured it out the 41st millennium.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but, you know, we'll see.
Aside from any big, do we think we're gonna go big on reveals this weekend?
Is it gonna be a big one, right? I guess, you know, which I think it'd be fun to see. I bet there will be some. Gotta be something, right? I will say though, before we get too far off the Impulsor, I'm gonna continue to preach the virtues of the Impulsor.
Have you gotten it out anymore?
Oh yeah, man. I've played. I mean, it's not in my Blood Angel list. I have zero vehicles. I have all infantry all the time. Just swarming with dudes and swords and fists. Mm-hmm. For the Adepticon team tournament, taking two Impulsors at least, I think, because it has such a fine amount of utility in those things. It's very difficult to dig it out if you put the 4+ invulnerable on it.
Yep.
It can move 14 inches and then dump people out. So it's got an impressive threat range. And its threat could be just holding an objective, getting to an objective, denying someone else an objective, or scooting up to dump your dudes in a building to sweep and clear it.
And if those dudes happen to be six Death Watch Primaris with a Thunder Hammer.
You can't assault after it, but you can still shoot.
They're still also just going to be in that building, yeah, being angry.
Yeah. No, agreed. No, it's just, and it's for the points that you pay and for the number of wounds, the fact that it blows up for D6 mortal wounds is not insignificant.
Yeah. I didn't realize that. What's the premium for a Death Watch Primaris Marine? How many more points?
I don't think you pay any more points.
You know what I meant.
Death Company Intercessor.
Yeah,
one extra point.
One extra point.
Yeah, they're 18 points model.
Why would you not?
It's an elite choice. That's actually why you don't, because they're an elite choice. If I could just put them, if they were troops, so you'd be like, yeah, why not? I'm already taking intercessors. Let me free up 10 points.
That's one thing I miss about 7th edition. And I don't like to be that guy that's like, oh, I miss this and this, but like, I do miss like Belial making Deathwing troops, and I think Blood Angels had a guy that made Death Company troops. Did he not?
They did that a lot to get around the Force Org chart and stuff.
Yeah, and it was painfully. I was just very much aware. A few weeks ago, I was playing a buddy of ours, Horton. I was playing him, and I was playing my Deathwing army, and I had 4 command points.
Yeah,
that was exciting. I would definitely like to see characters able to turn those choices, like thematically, if it makes sense, like, you know, have somebody to let those Death Company be counted as troops.
Well, there's so many different ways to build. I mean, I'm playing Counterpoint, playing Devil's Advocate at this point. There's so many different ways to build army lists. We just don't do it because you're right. That's because of the command point sacrifice.
The issue is the command point economy. It's funny. The command point economy is really the only thing that keeps it from being entirely open play, you know, essentially. Otherwise, there'd be no reason not to just take the specialized attachments. So, I don't know. I think there's probably a better way to organize 40K. I've always been a big proponent of economy of choice is what makes games interesting. And editions of 40K tend to get, you know, they kind of write themselves into a place where everything kind of gets to infinite power because that's you kind of have to keep scaling up somewhere, right? So, I don't know how they're going to handle that, but I'd love to see a different way of building armies in 40K, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, I would just like to see. And another thing, I think that, you know, armies that right now struggle, for instance, Deathwing, you know, Deathwing armies, all Terminator armies, while very thematic for Dark Angels, you're just never going to see them in a serious way because you can't do half the things that they need to do to make them viable. If you tried to play a pure Deathwing army, a lot of their abilities that they used to have are now relegated to command points.
Yeah, you're shortchanging yourself on part of the fun of the game too. I mean, like, exactly. You're not getting to play that area, that phase of the game. Yeah. Or that part of the game, and that could be frustrating.
Yeah, and it just makes you feel it makes the army weaker, and if they could just get more command points to at least take advantage of, you know, that whole part of the game, then it would make them a more viable option.
But I have faith. I mean, I can tell you this. I mean, the Harlequin list that was played at your store.
Oh, he was Colin. Oh my gosh, that list is my new favorite Harlequin list ever. It was amazing what that little points change allowed Harlequin players to do, to go from a battalion and an outrider detachment or whatever you're going to use to going to 2 full battalions, Harlequins, has just made them so good. It's very exciting to be a Harlequins player right now. And I'm putting 10 more players together so that I can essentially have almost his exact same list, because that list is so good.
Well, where I'm going is that the game is shown they're willing to push some of the things. Like, Blood Angels are the exact same way. Like, BA in general were like you're talking about Deathwing. Like, everything that you wanted to do cost you command points that you just didn't really – you couldn't scrape together because the rest of the list wasn't effective. So they found a way, either by hook or by crook or – just exquisite, careful planning to allow you to get enough toys on the table and have the strategy and mechanics still be there and be something that you could, you know, really manipulate.
Yeah, and it's amazing how just a few more CP can make an army scary. You know, and that was very apparent with Harlequin. So very happy with where Harlequins are right now. I wish they had more than what, 4 or 5 model kits, but I'll take what I can get. That is a fun army to play, and it's just got even more fun with that. So if Blood Angels are getting some love, Dark Angels are due to get some love. I'm pretty happy.
Nice. Let's go Grey Knights.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Well, I mean, Grey Knights, yeah, those guys though, too. If they, yeah, well, I'm saying that if the game pushes them, right? I mean, like, think about things like World Eaters and Alpha Legion. You know, they're one moon models that have some play based off the Psychic Awakening. The Psychic Awakening, I'll be honest, it's doing a lot more than I thought it was going to do.
Yeah, well, I mean, heck, it's adding a fair amount of rules. So, yeah, that's going to give them...
But it's theme. It's preserving theme and getting some of these things, making them actually playable, which is nice.
I think it's awesome.
Yeah. And I don't even know what happened, because I don't read anything Chaos, but I've sold I sold 5 Lords of Skulls in the past month.
Yeah, so, they were all caked in just like dust and coffee stains.
I don't know what happened there, but
they dropped 190 points.
Yeah, that might have been a factor, right? Somebody called me and said, I need 3 Lords of Skulls.
Oh. I've had buddies call me like on the low, thinking I don't know what the deal is. They're like, yo, man, so you know, I figured you might have a Lord of Skulls hanging around. Can I like get it from you? Out of my cold dead hands. I actually don't. I don't have one. But it's kind of funny how people were asking, thinking that they were like tapped into the secrets of the universe. Or
whatever. Yeah, like, let me do you a favor and take that off your hands for you. Yeah,
I heard on another podcast someone make a joke that I think there's a lot of conspiracy theorists out there who are like, oh, Games Workshop's just trying to move stock, or you know, they're trying to get us to buy the newest models because with good rules. And I don't think they necessarily understand that connection just yet, because they keep like getting blown out of these random kits. I'm sure there's a guy in Nottingham being like, what is up with all these corners?
Well, the actuaries aren't talking to the rules makers, you know, they're
first these Thunderfire cannons, and now what's this?
What was it when Forge World, we just like that thing just vanished?
The Scorpion, Whirlwind Scorpius, and the Vindicator.
The Vindicator with the laser cannon on it. Yep. Those things just vanished.
Yeah,
we got. I think my favorite
like meme 8th edition hobby purchase was like right out of the gates. Like the most confused guy in the factory was the guy who had to make 1 million Razorwing flocks. Like those little birds that like he probably didn't even know that they made those, and he's like, why do I have to make a swimming pool worth of this? Okay, fine.
Wedding supply stores for some reason selling out of all their little miniature doves.
There's another game that actually had like a very good stand-in. It's like Zombicide, I think.
Oh,
or something like that. And it has like a flock of or a murder of ravens or something.
Yeah.
And I was joking with somebody like that company just immediately went bankrupt because they're like, people are loving the ravens, guys. we're doing an expansion. We're gonna have the Raven family. There's gonna be, you know, we're gonna develop a real big backstory. This is it, man. This is our moment.
And then one FAQ later,
they're overextended and did not understand their market. Yeah, that's great. I remember what was it? ATC that year. Somebody had it was just hundreds. It seemed like of those little wedding cake doves that you put on wedding cake. On bases and just moving them everywhere all over. I walked by the table and I just had to stop and take a picture. I couldn't believe it.
I really like that. It couldn't be more than probably like a year that the community's just decided that, you know, we're not going to make models out of marshmallows and stuff anymore, and wedding cake toppers, and you know, we're kind of taking ourselves a little more seriously.
Well, the standards,
Europe, UK, they still do weird stuff, but you know, here I feel like we're not as dumb about it.
yeah, good. it was right around 8th edition, right when it really kind of got it started getting policed a lot more heavily at events too, right? Because I remember a few years ago people were, you know, Gundam models as Riptides, just whatever. And then it seemed like the tournament scene really started policing that up kind of together, and I can't remember exactly why that happened, but I think it had something to do with those razor flux.
Feels like no longer desperate to sell a ticket to anyone, like literally anyone. You know, like tournaments started selling out, and like you can all of a sudden have wonderful things like standards. So that is a nice thing about being a popular game all of a sudden.
Nice. Let's take a quick break, and then we'll come back and talk about some LVO plans.
Ooh.
Yeehaw.
See you in a minute.
FTN is brought to you by Discount Games Inc. Please visit them at www.discountgamesinc.com. And don't forget to ask Jay about ways to save even more on your hobby projects.
We are back. Still got Ricky and Val here.
I'm excited. It's after 11 p.m.
I'm working with this holiday bulge here.
Why?
I realize how that sounded right after I said it, but... I'm just saying, I've eaten a lot of stuff over the holidays. It's real.
Oh, referring to your extended stomach. I got you.
And maybe may all be catching up to me now. I need to remember that for next year, if I can remember it for next year.
My family does this. Everybody kind of chips in on this, on like a weight loss challenge for New Year's every year. So I feel it's my obligation from Thanksgiving to Christmas to bulk up. So that I can, you know, I'll have more to lose so that I can win this thing. So I'm still kind of sitting there with that, too.
I'm pulling for you, Ricky. Be an inspiration to me.
There we go. Yeah. I'll be your motivation.
All right. Well, listen, thanks forever for listening and being with us at the kickoff show of this year. Please, please, please leave us 5-star reviews wherever you listen to us, iTunes, otherwise. Just leave them wherever the max possible stars you can. It is how just other like people find us. Yeah. What are you saying?
Oh, sorry. I was just trying to make a joke about 5 stars, just like your Uber driver. You just treat us nice.
That's it. Yeah.
We left a bottle of water out there for you. You know,
got
like
mints.
When you were looking at your cell phone, we didn't try and talk to you. Yeah, it's fine. Like 5 stars.
It's how other people find it. It's one of the easiest way to support the show. And we really appreciate it, and also hit up our sponsors. They're so kind to us. And again, just doing stuff that you would normally do. I mean, and also leaving us a 5-star review is one of the great ways to keep pushing us through this year. So we're going to talk about getting ready for LVO.
Oh yes, there is that little thing known as LVO coming up there, isn't it? Now are you confirmed? Are you going out to the desert this year?
I'm going. I think it's the largest 40K tournament in the galaxy.
That is very likely the case. Reese is proudly trumpeting from the mountaintops that he has sold over 1,000 tickets.
Brag.
It's very impressive. No, I mean, it's one of those things. It's going to, I think, you know, kind of building on itself at this point. People want to go and be part of the spectacle. And, you know, I'm included. Like I was a holdout. I don't think I even went to the, it was difficult for work time for me, like getting off on this, in this part of the year. But I've just kind of worked it into my schedule now. And, you know, I didn't even show up to like this 5th or 6th one, but I've now made it a can't miss event.
I'm not sure if that's true, Paul. But maybe, well, I'm sorry, I'm just trying to think of like the, so your first one was three years ago?
Yeah, the first one, yeah, was,
this is my 4th, and I think there would have been 3 before that.
Is it?
I don't know.
I didn't go until 2 years ago. This would be my 3rd, yeah.
It may have felt like you were missing out on a big party for years, but I think you were in there just soon enough. So like, I think it's something I'm able to talk about here. Early supporter of my podcasting endeavor with the one and only Peter the Falcon. Paul, I feel comfortable saying that 40K Stat Center is going to be doing some extra additional over the top coverage of the Las Vegas Open. This is breaking news. I saved this for your show, Paul.
I'm excited.
And because obviously there's an amazing Games Workshop stream. They'll be covering a table, beautiful terrain, two beautiful men likely going to be commentating and talking about that. It's going to be awesome. However, we're going to bring you the tournament as a whole is what we're looking to do. We're going to have a talented booth of commentators, and ideally we're going to have someone on a mobile device or camera out and about in the tables reacting to the Twitch stream and going out and finding the action and the important moments and doing interviews out in the sea of people playing Warhammer. But right now it's just me and a guy in a bird costume, and I'm trying to find people who just love talking about 40K on the internet. I don't really know a lot of those types of people.
Wait a second.
So you need some field reporters. Yeah, I wish you knew somebody that likes to talk about Warhammer that would be going out there. That doesn't make a good luck finding that.
Established audience and fan base. Yeah. You know, someone who could really help get the word out, and
somebody who tries to get out there and do multiple platforms. You know, pretty well known in the community. Yeah.
Streaming. I'm just stumped, man. I don't know. Paul Murphy, would you like to be on the show?
Oh, I would be honored to be on the show. Stat Center. Did you hear Stat Center get a plug on FTN a couple weeks ago?
Dude, Stat Center gets plugs on FTN. You retweeted or whatever our first episode, man. Like, you've been behind us since the beginning. It's really nice.
Super quality work over there.
Oh yeah, I'd love to have you. There's another person familiar to this show that we are. Well, I've dispatched said Birdman to the northwest of the United States, and he will be giving another full court press as well, trying to convince this other individual to join this team. So we're starting up. I've already got the channel name. It's 40K Stat Center The Ocho. And we're going to be broadcasting for 36 hours or so. It's a really stupid idea, but it's going to be a lot. And we have a lot of really exciting plans and ways and means, and hopefully we'll have a really engaging couple of hours of content for people to enjoy and see the
whole. Out of 36, we will have two engaging hours of content.
Hey, that's better than some shows. So you know what?
You promise it. Look, we only promise 2 hours of good content.
The trick is we're not going to tell them when it is.
No, you got to watch the whole thing because those two hours are going to be electrifying.
And at some point, we're going to say a code word, and you get a free Lord of Skulls if you're able to tell us the code word at the end of the stream.
No, don't joke about that. Because I might have to listen as well.
So yeah, what I'm trying to figure out is my number one fantasy. You know, once we get the more basic technical things done, I have my next biggest fantasy is to just have a drone cam, so that just flying over, but like, and then have an overlay of the drone cam that just flashes the words "stupid drone cam," and because it would be nothing more annoying than playing a Warhammer tournament and just hearing like just buzzing like 10 feet above your table.
The best part is if you just got it lower and it's like blowing their codex, like the pages.
This thing's it's cavernous in there. I've never piloted a drone, but it seems like it kind of flies itself. What could go wrong?
Yeah, what could go wrong? I know I have a personal friend who has crashed more drones. There's one that I would imagine.
How could he crash? Come on. Have you ever flown a regular RC helicopter? That's impossible.
Those are impossible.
They have simulators for that kind of stuff. You're supposed to practice before you wreck your. I don't know anything does.
You immediately destroy your RC helicopter, which is what I did on Christmas Day about 10 years ago.
We're getting off topic. I want to talk about these 2.5 hours of electrifying content.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Yeah. So I think there's so many different ways to talk about it, because obviously we won't have a specific table, but we will have spotters out in the field. We will have ways of tracking and following scores live as they come in. So we'll know where to go. And so we'll also be able to take, like I was saying, guidance from the Twitch chat and people out and about to get our camera where it needs to be to give you a bigger picture of the whole thing. And then you will have not just the narratives of the best players literally from around the world. You got Matt Morsali from Australia coming up. You got Manny Chima from the UK coming out. You've got all the Americans you know and love will be there battling it out. You've got Mr. Siegler. He's going to be there. We even got the Canadian Jim Vessel. Remember him? He was leading all the way through, and he's still officially leading. Basically, everyone who's been mentioned in a sentence about competitive 40K pretty much in the last year is going to be at the LVO playing for literally all the marbles, and it's going to be a ton of fun. And you know, I'm joking about the amount of hours we're going to be there, because it's the LVO itself is a 10 round affair at this point.
Look, man, yeah, I'm down. Look, you sold me at 36 hours of talking about Warhammer. I'm quite right? happy to chit chat and talk and analyze what's happening and talk to players and tell other people about the cool players and cool plays that are going on.
That's right.
I'm gonna watch all of it.
That's right. From the drone. Actually, no, I'm gonna have you be the drone pilot.
Can I do that from Southwest Virginia?
It's a drone, of range? Course you can.
Yeah. We're gonna have to set up some sort of
internet.
Yeah. We'll have to use some sort of interconnected network of computers
and some type of plausible deniability.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
That's right. And then when you crash land onto a table, you just leave wherever it was you were accessing said interweb of connectivity and go home and have dinner. You know?
Yeah.
Never happened.
I'll do this from work. Hey, I can assign it as extra credit for my students. So it'll chip.
Look, yeah. If anybody can pilot a drone, it's probably a 13-year-old. So.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
We grew up with video games, too. All right. Let's not sell ourselves short here. I don't know if Paul did, but I did.
Yes, of course I did.
Well, there's two controller sticks? What?
That's too many.
This is going to be awesome, Val. I think it's going to be what people want.
Yes. And if you found any of the incoherent rambling from the last 30 seconds funny, that's the kind of stuff you're going to see there that day, folks. So, yes.
Well, and you're talking about, I mean, please pardon the hubris here, but a bit of a dream team of 40K content, I guess, analysis and creation and relation delivery. So
I don't know which one of us is Howard Cosell. It's me, but Jay Simpson, and we're like the original Monday Night lineup. It's going to be awesome.
There you go. Well, anyway, I'm looking forward to it. So let's do it.
I do want to point out that Paul didn't call it a dream team until he was invited.
Well, I mean, he didn't know about Ed. Like, there's really only one other member of the team at this point. And someone who I will hopefully, Pete's planning on being real polite and nice and doesn't want to make them feel pressured into doing this instead of playing. But no, I'm just going to make him do it.
Let me know if I should lean into him also.
Well, yeah, there's going to be some, I'm not going to say there's going to be some cyberbullying. But there's no cyberbullying.
There will be no cyberbullying. There will be explaining the advantages of how awesome this will be.
Oh, this is going to be super awesome. And
just
guys,
lead off with, you know, you're probably going to lose anyway.
Oh, 100%.
Odds are.
That is a known. That is a known, as Donald Rumsfeld might have said. the other thing is, too, guys, that weekend is actually a tremendous amount of 40K happening, like not even just here. There's also down under is CanCon, which is their LVO, essentially. So I have a fantasy of doing like a interhemispheral check-in and seeing if we can get some funny talking Australians to give us an update on their event and spin it around there. On Frontline Gaming stream, they'll be streaming the AOS side of the festivities at LVO, which will probably be the largest. Actually, that may not be true. There are some very large AOS tournaments in both the UK and Australia. I don't know if it'll be the largest of that ilk. It'll nonetheless be a very large AOS tournament. And then, of course, the Games Workshop stream itself. So there's going to be so much content coming out. Why not just let it filter through us first? Percolate. Through our filter of knowledge and out to you, rather than trying to just ingest all that and getting all bloated like Ricky did in the lead up to his family's weight loss challenge.
Look, I'll even put it this way: you're gonna want to listen to us while you're painting or something, you know. So why not? Why not do that?
Why not do that for 30 hours?
That's the soft sell.
No, it's great. Actually, I was trying to think. I was thinking because I'm doing is thinking about awesome stuff we could do, like Ricky's drone. And one thought I had is like, is there such thing as like live streaming podcasts? And I was like, the radio.
That's right.
But then, how you can't just do that.
That's I like the way that. You think though. That's back to we used to host. you know, a live show. That was back in the early days of the internets and Google Hangouts and stuff. But now, yeah, it's a, I think this
we could do it on
some of that.
Discord chat channel. I hear the kids like the Discord. I don't know. I just want to.
It's
going to
be great. There's going to be tons of content. I know you kick around some ideas. If you let me kick around some ideas with you, you know, I've got. I'm sure there's some things I might be able to suggest. You probably already thought of them though.
Thank you. Thank you for assuming that correctly, Paul. But I will nonetheless, you know, patronize you and hear out your ideas and claim them as my own.
Well, it's going to be fun. Well, look, man, this is going to be a three weeks in crash course, 2.5 weeks crash course of. About a stream, a 36-hour show.
A 36-hour stream of consciousness.
But you know what?
There's greatest minds in the business.
Plenty of energy drinks.
Oh, man, come on. We don't need drugs. You kidding me? This is going to be all natural, baby.
It's going to be four grown men slamming hams.
Slamming hams with our happy bulges.
What could go wrong? This sounds like an entirely different genre than what we're actually talking about.
I know.
But,
I really want to talk about this Nurgle list I played against, but I don't know how to segue it.
That was not how. That was
apropos of nothing. Nurgle, go.
So ham slapping, festering meat. Nurgle. Talk some Nurgle.
Well, getting ready, speaking of other tournaments and big tournaments, getting ready for Adepticon. I'm going to take Blood Angels to Adepticon.
Yeah.
What a joy to be able to do that. Again, so happy to be able to take something that I really have some affection for and play it on the table. I know some people are going to get tired of hearing me say it, but it's the truth.
Is it for singles that you're bringing in, or is your team going to do?
Team's going to do Blood Angels. Yeah, I don't know. I can somehow convince them all that it was a good idea.
Sure.
But I was playing against someone on the team. He brought a Nurgle list to test against. And demons in general, demons are still, man, I think demons haven't gotten a lot of attention, you know, like they haven't gotten fancy new rules or whatever, you know, past the Slaanesh stuff that got added, but they're still a powerhouse. And in the format to where the Adepticon team format changes how you build your army, kind of gives you some harsh limits on what each person can bring.
Yep.
With reserve points and then being able to summon in whatever you want, it's kind of a way to break those rules.
So I think in general, it's sort of untested territory. I know it's been played a little bit with some success as well, but I don't know if anyone's really gone, you know, way, way, way down that rabbit hole.
I think it's a little tricksy, right? Like, you could also mess yourself up too, but you know, like even, but summoning, let's take the summoning role out of it. We talk about pink horrors had the ability to split.
Right.
Like, there are ways you can basically make that unit invulnerable. Like, they're never going to kill through all of your points in one round because you just keep bringing back two blue horrors or whatever. And they're just going to run out of guns.
I wonder what the perfect equilibrium of like pink horrors to like reserve points is to make and you know to just make it so that you never run out of horrors. It's impossible.
But it only works once though. Like when your opponent figures out what's happening, or if they even know it before the start, they're just gonna shoot at something else. They're gonna shoot at your.
What if it's only other things you have is pink horrors, man?
That is true. That's
just
not
an all pink horror list.
What we haven't seen that in quite some time for some other reasons, you know, but we haven't seen that. That's probably because plague bearers were always so reliable. Like you didn't have to do hardly anything and they just always worked.
Yeah. And they have some fantastic buffing characters as well that are really synergistic and
yeah, that you just had to stick there. They just had to be standing somewhere
and there were just always some really delightful characters that could also hang out behind them. So yeah, they
Like one of the other real kind of unfair things you could do with pink horrors is shorten your charge with them after you brought them in. But how often did that come up, and how often was it effective? I don't know.
That was one of those that was a little Jim Vessel wrinkle that he used to get to talk about on podcasts when that list was king.
It's still a good tactic. I mean, there are times when you want that to be the case, but I think it's so fringe though that it doesn't. It's never been a power strategy because it just doesn't. You can't bank on it happening or being effective in every game.
No, it's just a neat way to use 5 points that you can't figure out anywhere else for. You know.
Yeah. Well, I mean, again, in ITC, not giving up kill one or kill more is pretty important, and
that's a big deal. Yeah.
And so that's. I mean, I think again, really underutilized on the demon front. But now, demons have changed a little bit. Plague bearers, you know, things are a slight change in how demons work. And so the same types of things aren't necessarily as effective anymore. But in this alternate format tournament, I found it to be really strong. And I think that it's something people should consider if they're on the fence about what to play. And, you know, a lot of demon players probably already have these models on the table anyway, or on their shelves anyway.
Yeah, I mean, and that's the other thing too, is if you're a collector of demons like I am of orcs, why not go to the tournament with literally your entire collection and just cycle through the whole thing with the same legal list, you know? Like, I think that's kind of awesome.
Yeah, you put 500 points in reserve, maybe 400. You know, I don't know if I want to go more than 400.
Yeah, I think it's been done, I don't want to put the Australian that I was talking about earlier. I think he ran a really heavy summoning list very recently, but I don't know. So Stat Center is a fever dream because there's so many tournaments. I don't know what I'm talking about. I wish I need my notes and my spectacles and I could back that up. But essentially, you know, like, that's what he would do. He would just have like crates of models that he could pick and choose from, and it worked out very well, I think, in that instance.
I think the only real limiting factor there is who are you riding with and how big is their car, or how much are you willing to pay for luggage, right, for the airline?
How do you pack all your Soul Grinders and Plague Hulks into?
Our friend Horton, you know, he came up to our tournament and we were playing a game the night before, and he's got his giant cart there with all of his stuff on it, and I point down, I was like, what's that? And he's, that's in case I get to bring that in. You know, it's he brings giant Demon Prince models, he's got all these models on the off chance that what is the thing that they'll do where they turn into a demon prince or whatever?
Oh, the spawn.
He's got stuff for that, and then you got stuff in case you need to summon or whatever. So it's
the gift chaos of chaos or whatever, the boons, chaos boons or something.
Yeah, that's tough, man, because it's, you know, it'd be the one time you didn't bring it that it goes off and you don't have the Demon Prince model there and you're running through the event.
Remember, I've had to do that before. I mean, this is years and years and years ago, but dude spawned. I think it may have been the second time somebody spawned into a Demon Prince in the game. I had to go on the hunt.
Y'all got any of them Demon Princes?
But that's even that. Don't never do that, by the way. You want to see that is a salt inspiring move, because you're not supposed to be able to do that stuff if you don't have the model. You borrow a model from somebody down the way or whatever. Mm-hmm. I know it was unlikely that it just happened in the game, but
yeah, you probably just came back with like a salt shaker in those days and you're like, it's a Demon Prince.
Close enough. Put a little frowny face on it. No, I would not do that, but this is how far we've come as a culture. We are now a polite society.
Yes, we are officially a civilized. No, let's not make such pronouncements. Let's save that for the stream, Paul.
Okay, all right. I'm practicing right now.
It's good. That's good. We just want to save our most hottest takes for the stream. And I tell you, declaring that Warhammer is civilized, that's a hot take.
It's bold. It's bold.
I'll be prepared to back it up by the time it comes up again.
Hey, we're on a really good streak of I'd say, well-mannered and awesome tournament results. So we are due for an absolute cluster F disaster. Maybe a fist fight. I don't know. Oh, it's going to be.
We'll see how it goes. And where are people going to hear about it first? On the Ocho.
Well, right there on 40KSC the Ocho. I need to get a really slick Spanish speaker to do a nice bumper lead in.
That'd be great.
All levels to Horus. Yes. I don't know if you're aware of this, guys, but we all think we have cool podcasts, but one of the largest in the world is, I'm going to screw it up, is La Voz de Horus, I think is how you say it. Anyway, it is a Spain podcast, and they have tens of thousands of listeners, and they win actual podcasting awards in Spain.
Interesting.
Like, not genre, not like best tabletop, like best like current events show.
Like, they're, that's cool.
Wow.
Awesome. Yeah.
Paul, weren't we still getting beaten out by Betty Two Needles at one point or something there? The knitting podcast is what we kept showing up.
There used to be so many knitting podcasts, and I don't know if they got reclassified into another like grouping in iTunes or something, but it was like 49 knitting. It was Car Talk, 49 knitting podcast, and then us. But it was like, yeah, it was like Sally Two Needles. They sound like, you know, crocheting gangsters.
Look, I owed Sally Two Needles some money for a little while, and it was not a comfortable position, I'll tell you.
Oh, she stitched you up in a jam. That's what Oh, well. So I sidetracked from demons, but anyway, I think that in a marine-centric world, which is really what we are right now, you're going to look for things that make it difficult for them to play the kind of game that they want to play, and the demons may have an answer for that.
We're going to find out.
That's true. Yeah, we can make some predictions. I see, Val, you come armed with actual stats. What Ricky and I have are you know, wild opinions,
accusations,
gutsy feely. Yeah, okay.
It's sarcasm.
I mean, I'm a little more grounded in things. But what specifically are you looking for here?
Well, what do you think is going to take the LVO?
I would. Well, you know, I was gonna say. Obviously Marines. I don't know if that's necessarily the case because Mr. Siegler will be in attendance. He has managed to fend off the best Marine players at two very large tournaments at least. And wind up clinching the win. It's hard for me to believe, though, that Astartes don't wind up, you know, at least with an incredibly large share of the top eight.
See, that's it. Let's more predict the top eight. Like, I think last year we could have predicted the top eight, and we did, actually. I think it was, you know, largely Castellans.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think in the top eight there was at least two. I don't know if there were that many that made it there, and there was the one Eldari flyer list. But to answer your question, I would go to so far as to say six Astartes players in the top eight, depending. Although, actually, no. If we're just saying Astartes, not even just Space Marines,
yeah, because Raven Guard.
Because if they're doing an open day this weekend and they announce their pre-order for the new Psychic Awakening, and it launches next weekend on the 10th, speculating here, but if that's the timeline, which seems reasonable, then our friends the Grey Knights, our friends the Dark Angels, and Thousand Suns, who have...
Look, I just like wanted to pick you, Val. I don't want you to hedge your bets.
I'm not hedging my bets. I'm
just
saying, like,
shoot from the hip, Val. Go with your heart. Eight. It's like the Force,
I'm
man. You gotta feel
eight.
It.
8 for 8 power armor.
Eight for 8. Okay.
It's going to be 32 hours of coverage of
that's
us
how you feel
trying to convince
hours, Paul.
Him.
I don't know. Perhaps you know what you're getting into, but you can't take a question that you can answer in a sentence and answer it in a sentence. Okay.
Yeah. You don't generate 32 hours of content like that.
Come on. Val's going to be over there at his computer.
Gotta get those numbers up, Paul.
Making those hand gestures. You know, longer. Longer.
I'm gonna get carpal tunnel from making that symbol. No, but like, okay, maybe I would not be shocked by 8 for 8, you know, maybe 6. My more couch thing that I've generally said is I'd say 6 of the top 8 will be power armor. And maybe Eldar are able to, because there's actually been a lot of like very powerful Eldar shooty lists.
I think we're going to see Inkarn in the top 8.
I don't even know if it's Inkarn, but we'll see. They just have, you know, they've got Stealthy and they've got, you know, Master Artisans, essentially. And you put that on very efficient Eldar shooting, and just like very efficient Marine shooting, it's good. So we'll see if that pans out. But I would suspect that the field's going to be in the 25-30% range. Right now, just regular Space Marines are 23% of the field. I know, I suspect as we get to LVO, people are playtesting and realizing that they don't have an answer for Marines. I think that will push more and more players towards Marines. So I would suggest that field percentage is going to go up. And as a result, I just think the likelihood of people getting through that seventh round, you know, like maybe they've not played the best Marine players up until that seventh round, but getting through that seventh round and not falling to that last incredibly hard matchup against a Marine player, I don't know how many people are going to pull it off.
I think Eldar Wave Serpents are very well positioned against Marines.
It depends on what else is in the list. I'm not saying it's impossible. I just think... I also... This is another hot take on the LVO. I am significantly curious to see how much attrition they see. We've been seeing... Like, this is not like a happy... thing, but it's the thing that's been happening, which is very high drop rates coming into GTs and majors, especially in Europe and actually even all over the States. You know, where you'd normally see 10%, you're seeing 20 and 30%. And when you ask TOs, it's because people don't want to go lose to Marines. So that's not the greatest thing for the meta. So I'm curious to see how that shakes out for the LVO and whether or not that actually does impact people or if they're just going to come to Vegas anyway and have a good time, because it will be a good time, guys.
Well, yeah, I know it's going
to
be an amazing
time. Can I just play devil's advocate on that, though? Like, how is that any different than when we would go to tournaments and lose to Eldar all through 7th?
The difference, well, I don't know. Well, Eldar certainly were not, they may have been around 20% of the field. Also, by the way, in 7th tournaments we're not 1,000 people. There's a reason why they sold 1,000 tickets, man.
Yeah, but they're like, LVO also has the format where it encourages you to, you know, or not encourages, but welcomes you to drop and play in the Sunday RTT, right? So, like, is it really...
Actually, every day. They have an RTT every day now.
Oh, so even more so. So, I mean, is it really that big of a deal in that format that they do that and they offer that? Is it that big of a deal if people are dropping?
I suppose it's all the stuff, like, it's the opposite side of what Paul was talking about with Blood Angels, man. People love to play with their faction, but if you're an Orc player right now, it's a little bit sad. It's a little bit hard. And you know, when it was not Eldari, the dead guys who come back, this is why I'm so good at stretching out my content.
The Inari.
Thank you. The Inari. When it was the Inari, yeah, they had a crazy win percentage, but they were 5 to 6% of the meta. This is a full quarter to a third of the meta that is playing a faction that's oppressive. And if you don't want to play that faction, you're you are going to have to play against it, almost virtually guaranteed.
Even if you are playing it yourself, you will still have to play against it.
Yeah, but if you're playing it yourself, then you probably don't care as much about having to play against. Like, Space Marine players are not upset, I would think, about playing other Space Marine players, because it's actually probably a pretty good game. In fact, I have been looking at a gigantic army of Raptors-themed Space Marines that I have purchased in the last few months. And it's fun. I love it.
Yep.
I wouldn't want to go toe-to-toe with it, with my orcs, necessarily. But that's, that's fine. You know what I'm saying?
No, I get what you're saying.
It all down. I'm very curious to see. That's all I'm saying. And I would love to be wrong, because I get lit up on YouTube all the time because we're all doom and gloom best Space Marines, and people are like, play the mission. Awesome. Guys, come to the LVO, play the mission, prove me wrong.
I'm going to get a little... I do think we're going to see at least one Incarn in the top 8. I think that Guard will make a good run, but they will not make the top 8. I don't think we'll see any Guard in the top 8 this time.
You don't think Brandon Grant's going to break on through?
Not if he's bringing Guard. I don't think so. I don't think Guard have the juice anymore.
Yeah, he rattled off. I think he took a first round L and then rattled off like 5 sick wins at SoCal. So he didn't wind up 5-1, but yeah, no, he did not win.
Yeah, no, I mean, look, they still have some legs. I think the Guard is a good list, and I mean, they've also survived a lot of like all the facts. Like, there's been no power taken out of the Guard at all, I don't think.
Then you forget the original facts of 8th edition.
Oh, well, the last 2 years of the beatdowns or whatever.
they were just like, they were why we have a 2-fac-a-year system. It was because the Guard Codex got fact out of the gate, fact again, and then had to be refact after Chapter Proofs came out, and they were like, okay, guys, we're sorry.
Somehow Yanari still trucked on. Yeah. But I think the Guard have gotten to a good place where they were. They're like it's a fair army, and that's probably maybe why I'm making my opinion of them, of whether or not they're going to, how deep they're going to go.
So I'm going to throw this out to you guys, because I'm Mr. Doom and Gloom. Who do you think, if not our friends, the Marines, or how about this? Who poses the best threat to the Marines right now, do you think, in the meta?
Oh, man. That aren't other Marines.
Yeah, the non-marine factions. So, yeah, like,
It's Eldar and demons. Anything. So the demons just have bodies or whatever and can stymie on the points. But then Eldar have, and this also goes to Dark Eldar too. They have a lot of good damage to stuff.
And so Tau are just out of the race now?
I wouldn't say out of the race, but you said the best.
Oh, okay. I gotcha. Because the only one who has done it is Tau up to now. But sure. I do wonder if the psychic awakening stuff has just shot them in the heart just as they were about to cross the finish line.
Tau are great. They're very good. And when it's played by an amazing pilot, then they're even better. No, but I think that they've just, like, what the Tau do, everybody knows it now.
Yeah, but like Iron Hands, even if you know what they're going to do, they can still do it.
That's fair. Look, I'm sticking with my answer, though. Demons and Eldar.
Demons and Eldar. All right. Ricky, Harlequins? Pure Harlequins?
Harlequins. Pure Harlequins. Go with your heart.
It's a little bit darker of a horse.
Listen, man. Listen. All you have to do is roll four up. If you roll four up, then you go all the way with Harlequins. That's it. Just don't roll one or two or three.
Flashy dressed dark horse. Just man. Looking,
speaking of just rolling all four, I was rolling all sixes, playing that kill team game, taking me back. I was playing Death Guard Marines, and it was just like, I'm going to fire this bolt around over there at that Eldar. Well, I guess he's dead now.
Yeah, where you just like where you become disappointed when it's not a six. Like you have that game. You're like, it was a six. Yeah, my buddy had that game. I guess two nights ago, we were over here. We have a Necromunda campaign going on in our club, and I have never accused someone of straight up and firmly believing in my heart that they had loaded dice until two nights ago in my house. I cussed out my friend and called him a cheater. And he goes, Ricky, you sold me these dice. And I said, you're right, I did, but that's still your fault. I have never seen someone's dice so hot in my entire life. And had I not known that I sold him those dice, you know, it was he had the Van Saar GW dice for Necromunda, and those things, I just kept seeing Van Saar logos the whole night, and I just watched my gang just get shot off the table. And I love Necromunda, but by the end of that night, I was like, this game is terrible. I want no part of it.
Well, that's what you get for selling shady dice, man.
I know. Thanks, G-dubs. I make good money off this dice, though.
Well, guys, profit. We'll go ahead and wrap this up. Thank you all for joining me tonight, especially for this first epic episode of 2020. We announced the coverage that will be on the Stat Center, the Ocho.
We'll make sure that it's posted out there. I'm hoping that we'll also get restreamed by a bunch of other casts and popular streams. So, fingers crossed, it'll be easy to find. You can check out the 40K Stat Center Facebook page. Give it a like. Give the Forge the Narrative page a like. I'm sure Paul will be sharing information there as well. So
thank you.
You'll know where it is. Just keep your eyes peeled and join us for the ride of your life.
Yeah, sounds fun. We'll talk more about it as we got a couple more shows before we get there. So, you know, as you get details, pass them to me and I will let people know how to find us.
Beautiful.
And what to expect. I mean, we've given them a pretty, you know, a good preview, a good view into what to expect.
But. Hey, we came up with a bunch of great ideas that now we need to figure out how to do, so it's going to be awesome.
Oh, well, Ricky.
I think we may have overpromised. We overpromised.
That's what they say, right? Overpromise, under... No. No, that's
it's
not
the reverse. Yeah, it's the other. Yeah, we've done this backwards.
I'm going to double our commitment. Four solid hours of commitment.
72 hours.
After the event. 64 hours. For four good hours.
Good night, everybody. See y'all soon.
Night.
Good night.
Happy New Year.
Make my day.